Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. We've got Perry Goldstein. We need Perry Goldstein. We've got Grant Bills. We need Grant Bills. I'm going to need some help getting through today's show. You can find her at Perry underscore Goldstein, him at Wisco Grant. Packers lose this game 16-13. They lose Tucker Kraft likely to a season-ending injury. Other than that, it was a pretty awesome day at Lambeau Field. Perry, Grant, how are you guys doing?
Yeah,
doing good.
And nightmare.
Nightmare.
Also fast. That, yeah.
Nightmare.
Not great.
Perry messages me last week and says, why isn't this the week that we get to talk about the Packers after the Packers beat the Steelers? I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, next week we'll get to talk about Packers Panthers home game. It'll be a ton of fun. Don't worry.
Look at Wrong. That face.
Not so much. Not so much. We do not get a fun game to talk about in any way, shape, or form. A nightmare day overall, a vomit fest. What was your exact word, Perry? What did you say? Gross.
Yuck.
Yuck. Yuck fits it perfectly. What? Let's start with some key takeaways in this one. Just how you're feeling. We're about 5 hours, a little less than 5 hours after the game as we're recording this. Still obviously very fresh and raw and disappointing, but Harry, I'll give you the floor first. How are you feeling? What's on your mind?
I mean, it was a bad loss. I'm sure we're going to like dive into why and all that, blah, blah, blah. I think across the season, you're going to get a stinker. This was certainly a stinker. And I think there's a reason why this one feels different than the Browns loss too, which maybe we can get into. But my biggest takeaway is like, you just lost arguably your best offensive player probably for the season. Like this game isn't just like itself in a vacuum, a loss. It is now going to impact the rest of their season. And like, that is just like, that is what I can't get over. And I know it's a fluke and I know it could have happened at any point, at any time. Like this is football, but to lose Tucker Kraft in this game is really painful. Just nightmare fuel, really, to think about like what this offense is going to look like without him. He's probably like the one player. I'm not really sure how you fill his hole. Like, no shade to Fitzpatrick or Musgrave, but like they ain't even close. Like they ain't even close. The same with the blocking. It just like that is like, and I know we probably should talk about like how bad the Packers showed up today and like all of that. And like we will, but like that, my key takeaway is just losing Tucker Kraft blows.
I've got a couple things to say really quick. And then Grant, want to hear your thoughts as well. First thing is, and I talked about this on the live post game show as well. I agree. You are welcome to, you know, a one stinker per season forgiveness. Green Bay used that already on their loss to the Browns. That's done and over with.
I very quickly glossed over that. I don't agree with that statement. I could like dive into it more. I really wanted to just like get to the Tucker Kraft of it all. No, this Fair game enough. Is horrible and inexcusable. No. That's gotcha. Not my excuse that I'm giving them by any means.
Yeah, I do think it's almost even worth going over of like, yeah, you know, when they lost to the Browns, you know, early in the season, some fluky things happen. I am willing to give a little bit of like, all right, I get one of those can happen. You can't have two. You can't have two. The second one you get no forgiveness for. And then the Tucker Kraft thing we'll get into quite a bit, but Green Bay could have won this game 87-0. And if they lost Tucker Kraft, that would have been my biggest takeaway from this game. So the loss of the player who is going to be, or supposed to be, one of the key catalysts towards you making a push in the playoffs and beyond, that's beyond devastating. That doesn't just affect the here and the now, that affects you come December, January, and beyond, right? So, and not only that, but it's based on the timeline. If it is, we don't know yet. It's been expected that it's going to be an ACL. You have the feeling it's an ACL. You feel the Packers knew it was an ACL based on Matt LaFleur's reaction after the game, etc., based on Tucker's reaction. But if that's the case, you're probably talking about open of next season, your probable pup candidate to begin the season potentially as well. So, yeah, not only affecting 2025, but 2026 as well. Fun times. Grant, how about you? How you doing, buddy?
So I'm good. You guys hit the Tucker Kraft part of it really well, but I'll just add to that. Like, imagine telling someone like, hey, I was a Packer game today. And you're like, well, it was maybe the worst home loss in the Matt LaFleur era. And you lost as 13-point underdogs, 13.5-point underdogs. And you scored 13 points for the record. And they go, oh, that stinks. And then you say, but actually, that's not the worst part. Actually, there's something worse and even worse than that. But I'll speak to the game. So I work in sports radio. I produce a four-hour midday show, and I host a two-hour evening drive show. So I, like, read a lot of live stream comments, so many, and take a lot of calls and screen a lot of calls. Like, I'm in it, okay? I'm listening. And I think Packers fans, at least on our network and the shows I work on, have been really, really upset after the Cleveland loss, after the Dallas game, and then also after Cincinnati and Arizona, and even a little bit after Pittsburgh, because even though Cincy, Arizona, Pittsburgh, those were wins, we've been waiting for that wall-to-wall, door-blowing, you know, dominating start-to-finish performance. They hadn't had it yet. And all week on my show, I talked about this game as this golden opportunity. Cincinnati, I think, looking back, maybe a little bit better than we thought. Winning by 9 isn't terrible, whatever. Arizona, I think, is a better team than their record would indicate. It was a nice comeback. They had some nice moments. Pittsburgh's like an 8 out of 10 type win. If they blew doors off of Carolina, let's say they win 30 to 10 and they finally turn together that performance, all of a sudden you look back over the last month and you're like, don't look now, but they've won 4 in a row out of the bye. They've gotten better every week. They're building. And now you get an extra day off this week. And the next portion of the season starts with this Monday night game against Philly. Like, it just would have been a perfect Sunday to get the exact win we've been waiting for. And not only did they not do that, they probably played their worst game maybe at home of the LaFleur era, and they got their, you know, best, most probably important player other than quarterback hurt on offense. So yeah, it's a horrible loss, but it's made even worse in my perspective because of how great a big time win could have been. Like, it's such a missed opportunity to really put your best foot forward and have Packers fans and everybody feeling a certain way that maybe they've been wanting to feel over the last month. So that's a huge bummer on top of it all too. It's not just a bad loss, but it was such a great opportunity for a great win.
And an opportunity to gain separation in the division with Detroit losing on the day. Now, thankfully, Detroit still lost on the day, which is potentially very helpful down the road as well. But it's tough to even look necessarily at that stuff right now when, you know, you kind of look at yourself in the mirror first. You're just like, this is not a good enough team. And I talked about it all week. I said, hey, if Green Bay gets out of this game and has one of those wins, like if they, you know, Fitzgerald misses the field goal at the end, and Green Bay gets the ball in overtime and goes down and scores, or, you know, they end up winning by 3 in overtime or whatever. It would have sucked, been disappointing or whatever, but I'm not going to apologize for that.
It's win. A win. It's in a the win. NFL.
I would yes. take that win. But I said going in, I'm like, I need at some point to see this team go out and play a four-quarter game. And at some point, the best teams in the league at some point knock out some opponents. Nice punch to the face. You're out. It's a total knockout. And
not every
and
week. Win.
Yeah, exactly.
You're there at some point. Yeah.
At some point. Totally. Not every week, but at some point.
And like you, the Bills just did to the Panthers.
Yeah, like the Bills did to the Panthers a week ago, right? And so you look at this game and you're like, you start looking at the schedule too, and you're like, I don't know, maybe one of those Minnesota games, maybe New York. Like, maybe you can get that big win in one of those. But like, this is kind of the one. You're at home against Carolina. Credit, by the way, not to take away from anything, and I'm only going to spend a second on this, but I thought Carolina played really well, specifically on defense in this game. Rico Dowdle was great. Their backup offensive lineman stepped up, and I thought on defense, they were everywhere. It felt like everything that Green Bay called deep, short, intermediate, they were on top of. So I did think Carolina played a really good football game and had a great plan against Green Bay. I'll also say, I talked about it this week, teams that lost by 30 plus the week before were 3-3 the following week going into this and improved by over 30 points on average the next game. And in last week, they lose by 31. Today, they win by 3. That's a 34-point difference. It's right on track with what we've seen from these teams coming off 30-point losses so far this year. But I thought Carolina played well, but at some point, Green Bay, as a team that we wanted to see play well and just beat the snot out of a team, not only didn't do that, not only just couldn't get the job done, period, and just picking up even a quote-unquote bad win, they have a really bad loss. In a team that, this will just be my kind of takeaway too, the weirdest possible sort of just like statistical breakdown of this game even, because you look at this, for example, Bryce Young. I tweeted this one out right before I came on. Bryce Young started this game 4 for 4 for 36 yards. Like, he was clicking on all cylinders, and they got no points out of it. No points out of the 4 for 4, 36 yard start from Bryce Young. After that point, for the remainder of the game, Bryce Young went 7 for 16 for 66 yards, no touchdowns, an interception, and won the freaking game. Like, the pass defense is after like the first like scripted plays for Bryce Young was totally fine for the most part. Now, you did have a Keyshawn Nixon pass interference penalty in the end zone. But you know, even outside of that, you would take that all day, every day. You look at some of the team stats in this game. The Packers had one more first down, ran 9 more plays, had 114. Nope. Easy, Andy. 104 yards more of total offense in this game. Had one more yard per play in this game, had 163 more passing yardage, ran for over 100 yards total in the game, had only 7 penalties, 5 for Carolina, no big difference there, and had more time of possession, believe it or not, than Carolina in this game.
Yeah, but like, when you go for 0-4 in the red zone, like, what none of that matters. That doesn't
very
matter.
Much so. But like, they, to very Dennis Green this thing, they are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook. Because no, go ahead. If you disagree,
I think the overall like point here is that like the Packers are incredibly inconsistent, right? Between what you're saying, Andy, and Grant's, you know, breakdown of the last couple of weeks. And when you can't trust that they're going to go in like and be who they are or who you think that they are, then you're going to get games like this. And I personally find it very hard to take them seriously when they look like this against Carolina at home. At home, too. At home. I can't get over that. It wasn't even in a way. It was at home.
And their first home game in a bit, too. Like, it's not like they've had a bunch of home games. Like, this should have... And the throwbacks look cool.
How
like,
do you not I get up for this? How do you not get up for this game?
I'm glad you brought that up, because it was something I was watching very early on.
It was also Jordan Love's birthday.
Very early on in the game. So I remember, obviously, back to that Detroit game where the sideline, not the stands, not the fans, not anything. The sideline was like its own like fan section. They were going nuts. The energy was insane. They were cheering each other on. Like, guys were flying off the field, fired up. Like, everything was amazing. It looks like a funeral. It looks like a funeral on the sideline when it was 0-0. I'm not even talking when things started to go bad later. I'm talking like earlier, like just guys, you know, kind of just standing, just watching, waiting for something to happen. No energy.
They just played a great signature win the week before.
Signature win the week
before. It's not like they're depressed on a losing streak.
On the road,
they just had an awesome moment.
Yeah. You're at home. You know, I don't know. I wouldn't say the crowd was like bad. They seemed like a fair crowd in coming into this game, and you gave them nothing to cheer for throughout the course of the game. And even in like late in the game, there was go Pack go chants. The crowd erupted when they got the tying touchdown and things like that. So when you gave them anything to cheer about, I thought the crowd was good. There was barely any Carolina Panthers fans in that stadium. It was like, it had to be like 95% Packers fans. And yet the sideline was just dead. The sideline was dead. There was no energy whatsoever. And it carried over to the field. It's weird.
It's very weird. And I know that we're going to get into the Matt LaFleur of it all. This week feels like, I don't want to say a turning point. There's been a lot of people, you know, barking about Matt LaFleur. This week feels like that really picked up. Greg Olsen on the broadcast, like, constantly was like, what are they doing? Why are they running the ball? Why are they doing this? Why won't they do this? So Greg Olsen was loud and clear. But the thing that jumped out to me was Pam Oliver's sideline report coming into the third quarter. She goes, I spoke with Matt LaFleur, and he told me that this is the exact type of game that we expected. Or like, I even wrote it down, like, because I wanted to make sure that I had it right, because it plays, I think, so into our frustration, maybe, with Matt LaFleur, if you're someone who's frustrated. It says, Matt LaFleur says the game is playing out just how we thought. That was the quote. And I'm like, what? Well, if this is what you expected, you're obviously not prepared for it. But also, like, you should have expected better than this. You're 13.5-point favorites at home. Like, you should not be in a dogfight at half thinking, this is what we came here today for. Like, no, you should have had a higher bar for what your team is capable of in a spot like this. So, whatever. It's a throwaway comment maybe to a sideline reporter, but I heard that. I'm like, oh, I don't love that if that's truly how he feels and how they came into this game and how they're thinking right now. I don't like that at all.
There's been a lot of comments about him, like, keeping, quote unquote, the training wheels on still of this offense. I'm not sure like what people mean by that. I mean, that can be taken in a bunch of different ways. I assume maybe it means on Jordan Love, which at this point, I'm not sure why Matt would be doing that, considering everything we've seen from Jordan. I mean, he had like one of his worst, his worst interception I've ever seen him throw today. Yeah. But so this is a bad time to be making this comment. But like, especially after coming off the Steelers game where he was absolutely on fire, like why on earth would you quote? And like, he might not be like, if he heard this comment, he'd be like, I don't know. That's not kind of how I'm game planning. I love my quarterback. I trust my quarterback. But like in my head, I don't understand A, why they weren't more aggressive on fourth down in this game. And B, why they didn't go for two when they scored, finally. And I don't know if that's like, these are completely unrelated things to this comment, or if it's all, it, to me, it feels all related. Like, what's with the training wheels?
So the training wheels, I think, is in the belief that this team is still trying to make it a Josh Jacobs first offense and trying to maybe run through him a little bit more. I mean, in this game, Jordan threw 37 times, Jacobs ran 17. So I don't know that that was necessarily something, but even in those 37 throws, like the third and four, for example, where they throw the swing pass to the outside and they lose 4 yards.
Shoot that into the sun.
Just let Jordan cook. Like, just let Jordan go. You don't need to try to outsmart the other team. Just trust Jordan. Like, call a normal play and let Jordan go. Like, just and like, you can have him scramble for it if he needs to. Like, he is capable of making plays within this offense. And it just felt like, no, we're gonna try to throw this quick bubble screen instead that loses 4 yards. I will disagree. I don't think they should have gone for two at the end. I think what happens is you miss and it gets really complicated really fast. And if you make, you really incentivize now the Panthers, where they're going for it on all four downs and everything, like, to get into field goal range. Whereas like, if you hold them three and out, now they punt. If you're up by one, you now are, you know, like, they're going for it. And like, you're just giving them almost more chances and more incentive to go down and have to get into field goal range. So okay. I personally would go with the extra point there. I mean, the it's not even here nor there, but the game is, should have nowhere even been in that situation at that point in time. Also on the fourth down, if anything, I think the fourth and eight was a really brutal moment in this game where they're going for the touchdown on fourth and eight, following a fourth and four, they get the third and four swing pass, lose 4 yards. It's fourth and eight, and you're going to need two scores to win the game. And if you miss there, or sorry, if Carolina goes down and scores any points at all, it's game over basically at that point. You're putting a ton of pressure on your defense. And even if you make it, you're not guaranteed to get the touchdown, even if they pick up the first down there. And then on top of that, you're again going to need two scores ultimately to win the game. So
I'm not saying go for it on every single.
No, I understand. I'm not saying that.
The choice there was obviously a bad choice, but there were previous fourth downs where I was like, this is shorter yardage. Like, you could be more aggressive and go for this instead of kicking. And one of those was the one that McManus missed.
Fair, totally fair.
The aggressiveness around the fourth down stuff. Like, I went golfing today because I needed something to do after this game. And like, watching Matt LaFleur this year and last year make fourth down decisions, and just general decisions or game flow choices when it's like, should we be aggressive or should we be more conservative? It's like me and a lot of people with their putter. Like, you're either hitting it way too soft, and you're like, you got to hit it. And then you smoke it 30 feet past the hole. And like, there's no middle ground. Like, it's either, why is he so scared? Oh, fourth and eight, and we're going to throw a YOLO ball into the end zone. He just can't find a middle ground with aggression. And I think that applies to fourth downs, but also like end of half situations, you know? And I don't know if that's just a run of bad luck for him where the aggressive decisions he makes aren't working, or I don't know how he finds equilibrium, but this goes back to last year too, when I thought he had a really bad year making, you know, fourth down and goal or punt decisions, those types of things.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by PrizePicks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, it's time to get ready for Week 10, and we've got a big one on Monday night with Philly coming to town. This should be a huge opportunity for Green Bay, and I'm expecting a big-time performance from Tucker Kraft in this one. Elsewhere in Week 10, I'm going with huge games from Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and Quinshon Judkins. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less than at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY, Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, we've all gone through difficult times, whether it be with addiction, heartbreak, financial troubles, or hundreds of other challenging situations that get presented to us on a day-to-day basis. I know I certainly have, and if you have, just know you're not alone. And the thing is, taking care of your mental health shouldn't be harder than taking care of your physical health. If you pull a muscle, you go see a doctor. But when it comes to finding the right therapist, suddenly it's frustrating. You've got long wait lists or you're staring down huge out-of-pocket costs. That's what usually stops people from getting help. That's where Rula comes in. Rula makes therapy simple, affordable, and fast. They work with most major insurance plans, and the average session copay is just $15. Just 15 bucks. Every therapist on the platform is licensed, vetted, and picked for their expertise, so you know you're going to talk to somebody legit, not just whoever happens to be available. And getting started could not be easier. You answer a few quick questions about what matters to you, and Rula connects you with in-network providers who actually fit your needs. You pick the time, and you could be talking to a therapist as soon as the next day. I can't stress enough how much therapy has been a blessing in my life, and it can be in yours as well. And Rula gives you that opportunity without having to break the bank. Now, thousands of guys have already used Rula to finally get the care they've needed, so don't keep putting it off. Go to Rula.com/Packaday and get started today. That's RULA.com/Packaday. Take the first step, get connected, and take control of your mental health.
Just a couple other things. And that the one thing on the fourth down decision too, and another reason I just really hated it, was they had all of their players like out in that moment. Like it was Romeo Doubs and then like a bunch of backups that were on the field at that point. So even just again, kind of knowing your personnel, I didn't really like that one. And to your larger point, Grant and Perry, it almost just feels like no matter which side of the coin he's been on, and I think you laid it out perfectly, Grant, he's been wrong.
Yeah. And part of some of that is luck. Some of that is you make the right call. It doesn't work. And then everyone loses their mind. And that's for part sure. of this. Sure.
Some of it is that, but it's just remarkable how when he's been ultra aggressive, it's blown up. And when he's been ultra passive, it is blown up. It just, again, he has not been able to find that sweet spot in it at all. And this, I think, was another kind of great example of it. I don't know what I will say this. Matt's talked about a lot of times of like, you know, sort of trusting his gut in the decision in the moment. I don't think that that's a good enough. Like, you have to be based in something. Are we going to be an aggressive team? Are we going to be a defense first team? And when we get in these situations, we're going to punt because we think our defense can get the ball back. I don't care which one you want to be, but it can't just be sometimes we're going to be aggressive, sometimes we're going to be passive, and you know what? My heart's going to tell me what's right in the moment. That to me isn't a good enough philosophy. If you want to say we're going to trust the analytics almost every time, whatever the analytics say, we're going to do that. Cool, let's do that. Or if you say, you know what? Again, we're going to, whatever that it thing is, analytics, offensive, defensive, aggressive, passive, I don't even care which one it is. Just pick one and have an identity, which, and again, I think identity is going to be a big talking point in this game because it does not feel like this team has an identity offensively, maybe defensively, but I don't like it. I don't like what the identity is defensively because I think it's a very bend but don't break, passive, give up a lot of long drives defense that I don't think is it's not my typical, particular cup of tea. And it feels like they're, just a little rudderless at the moment.
If you have a background or if you have we're going to be ultra aggressive like Dan Campbell, or we're going to be conservative, or we're going to go with the analytics, you're going to be right and wrong plenty of times, but at least you know who you are and you can make all your other decisions around that thing.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like you can't you can't build a house and do all of these other things if you don't, like, if you're not very sure of your foundation. So yeah, so like I like that point of view, Andy. I don't even care what it is, but just pick something. It doesn't mean that you can't occasionally stray from it, but have a little bit of an idea of what you're gonna do.
Let's talk about something positive for a second, then we'll get back. There's not going to be much for those of you who are looking for sunshine and rainbows or a bunch of positivity. I don't think we're probably going to be a ton of that today, but we'll try to get to some. We'll sneak in some things as well.
Jerseys were cool.
I did like the jerseys. Let's talk about our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. Grant, I'll let you have the floor first. Do you have a player of the game in this one?
God.
Okay, I'll start so you guys can think.
Sure, you go. Yeah.
I got Xavier McKinney. 9 tackles, sack, forced fumble, interception. Even without the interception play, the sack play, I thought he was flying around the field, making tackles, being where he was supposed to be, that they were using him in a few more fun ways in this game, and I thought it paid off for them. So I thought X was my player to watch in this game, and he paid it off. I thought he was one of the better players on the day, and a day that didn't have many to celebrate. Grant, Perry, anyone?
I guess Josh Jacobs. I mean, Xavier McKinney is the correct answer.
We don't have to choose a different one either. If we want to just go with X across the board, we can certainly do that too.
Well, we can. I thought Josh Jacobs, I was surprised he was able to do as much as he did, because I thought he looked really limited the last couple weeks, and they went to him a lot. And I thought he looked markedly better than last week. So I'll say Josh Jacobs.
Other than totally whiffing on a blitz up the egg.
Andy, you're the watcher of all 22. Was that Jacobs or was that Jenkins going the wrong way on that play?
I haven't seen it you have to check out the film.
Listen to this guy. No accountability at all. He has to check the film.
All right. I'm going to have to go back to the film on that one. I was at the game, so I didn't even get to see like it on TV. So like when you're in the press box, you can't see it. I've rewatched 3/4 of the game. My guess is that play happened already, but I don't know if I got to see the replay of exactly what happened. Maybe it was a 4th-quarter play. I don't know.
Subtle flex that he's in the press box.
Yeah, right.
I don't know that I have one. I thought maybe a few guys on, like, I don't know, Edge Cooper.
8
always
tackles.
Always looking good, always doing what he's supposed to be doing. I just thought this game, like, especially on defense, like, just really lacked any level of, like, explosive. I mean, I know X got the interception, but like in the end zone, I don't know. There was just no like moment today that I was like, okay, yeah, this defense like came to play.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. We'll go X and then a slight hat tip to Josh Jacobs, who had 21 touches for 100 yards and a touchdown in this game as well. But they're big free agent additions from last year, which have been so far a lot better than their free agent additions this year. The big one on our Habish Rotier injury report, of course, is Tucker Kraft. We talked about Kraft a bit already. The torn ACL is what the fear is and is likely for him. Matthew Golden went out of the game with a shoulder injury. He did not return. Colby Wooden went out. I can't remember what the exact injury was. He did not return, but he did. I think it was a shoulder as well. He did state in the locker room after that he's going to be good to go for Philadelphia next week. Now, sometimes players are a little bit over exuberant on their status for the following week, but Wooden said he's going to be good to go for next week. Aaron Banks also left with a stinger. He did not return. He did keep his pads on, was on the sidelines, and was never ruled out of the game. So I wonder if that was like in an emergency situation, they would have been able to put him back in, but they didn't want to based on his injury. We'll have to kind of keep an eye on him this week as well. But Kraft, the brutal stab in the back, kick to the nuts, heartbreaker. And then Matthew Golden, Colby Wooden, and Aaron Banks, the other injuries in this game. Any other thoughts on injuries?
Aaron Banks had been so healthy up until this point, so I guess you just go, oh, shucks, bad luck sometimes.
He's taken the Marshawn Lloyd school of how can I get injured in a new and unique way this week, school of thought.
I hope Matthew Golden is not serious. I really do. I mean, they're going to need him even more now, but it feels like they're like floundering a little bit on like what to do with him. I think Greg Olsen was also kind of talking about this on the broadcast, but I was thinking about it a lot, Grant, because you were listening too. Like, now that Christian Watson's back, it's like, what's his role? And I don't know. I've been kind of like waiting for that breakout game that hasn't come yet. There's like, I think it's there, but I don't know. Not that I think he's going to fill the Tucker Kraft role, but when he went out, I was like, damn, another one? Like,
we've just been getting pounded behind the line of scrimmage because that's the only thing they're doing. What would
I'm not
you do
sure why they're doing that. Why like use him downfield?
Well, this is what you say. What should we do with Matthew Golden? Not what they're doing currently.
Yeah, like, well,
anything other than what they're doing currently.
I'm like, only he gets asking open. That question because what they're doing right now isn't working.
He gets open. And I'm surprised that he didn't pull in that ball surrounded by three defenders today. I bet that's a play that he makes a good amount of the time. Like, he's got great downfield skills with the ball. He gets open. He separates. Now, I understand not all the targets are going to go his way. But what's frustrating is the only targets that are going his way are like, well, who's that for? You know, like, I always think of the Ben Cafferty quote from Veep when Kent does something stupid. He's always like, who's that for? Like, what is this serve? Like, who are you doing this for? And it's always these little checkdowns, bubble screens. That's not his bag.
Yeah. And also been. Like those weird jet sweeps they try to do with him now that they're like giving those to Savion Williams, which I actually think makes more sense for Savion Williams. But like,
sure.
What is this? Jaden Reed from last season? Like, come on. Like, I don't like it.
And I'm not anti-jet sweep. So many people are just anti-jet sweep. I'm not. I'm anti-jet sweep in week 8 if it hasn't worked since last year. Also, Savion Williams, I just don't need to see him on offense. And now look, if Tucker Kraft is hurt, that changes things. But like up until this point, I'm like, he's the human emergency brake on any drive that he's in. They've gone 45 yards down the field. And it's like, let's get a rep for Savion Williams. It's like, okay, you're going to lose 4 yards and we're going to punt. Like, that's how this is going to end. And then today he fumbles, which I don't know. I don't need him sprinkled in. Anytime I hear people talk about Savion Williams, well, you know, dangerous young playmaker. Maybe one day. I have no evidence to see that right now. This team's trying to win right now and contend right now.
And also, why is he the rookie getting more opportunities than your first round pick who can like actually stretch the field?
I don't get it.
I don't get it. Sorry, we segued into offense already.
No,
Andy,
I'll just add on top of that. This is in no way, shape or form an excuse. So please, nobody take it that way. There was a moment in this game where Watson was out getting checked for a concussion. You've got Tucker Kraft out with his ACL likely. You've got Wicks and Reed already out in the game. And Josh Jacobs was like, you know, at his point where he was getting the Emmanuel Wilson was getting, you know, a couple snaps in there, and like not on the field at that point in time is a 5-weapon group of Josh Jacobs, Tucker Kraft, Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, and Dontavian Wicks. That's like a unbelievable starting offensive weapon group, and it's all out and not at your disposal. Now, Watson eventually came back and played a good chunk in this game. Jacobs was obviously healthy. He was just getting a rest at the time, but you're left on the field with Emmanuel Wilson, John Fitzpatrick, Romeo Doubs, Malik Heath, and Savion Williams. That's what's left. And even Bo Melton got sprinkled in there, I think, on a play or two as well. And so, again, I am not making an excuse for the offense to say, well, that's why, guys, like clearly. But it should be noted, there is a crap ton of playmaking that is not on the field. And I don't even think I said Matthew Golden. Like, Matthew Golden, yeah. Too. So Golden, too, yeah. Watson, Reed, and Wicks and Kraft were all five of those were out at a legitimate point in this game. And it's like, that is a huge chunk of playmaking that they just didn't have at their disposal. And when you do have Savion Williams, Malik Heath, John Fitzpatrick, it doesn't feel as good with what you're doing out on the field. So,
they
gotta find a way around it.
They just got the ball to Luke Musgrave.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to figure out a way around it, but injuries played a huge factor, both ones that were already existing. I mean, they're also missing their left guard at that point in the game, and Aaron Banks as well. So it definitely played a huge role in this game. Just to finish up on Tucker Kraft for a moment, because we haven't been, you know, down enough already. Not only is this the number one yards after catch guy for tight ends in the NFL, I think he was fourth in the league in yards after catch total out of receivers, running backs, everybody in the NFL coming into this week, despite playing one fewer game than some of those players. Even if we get pass catching Luke Musgrave, like we saw in the final drive, which was some reason for a modicum of optimism, the difference in blocking between Kraft and Musgrave being out there, you already can't block up front. You already cannot run block. And the difference now between Kraft and Musgrave, who's probably going to be the primary tight end, is pretty substantial. You just got a lot worse blocking up front, and you were already horrid. So that's going to hurt. And for a team that every team is playing too high safety right now against this team and forcing you to take the small plays, the checkdowns, the easy, you know, plays, et cetera, that some of the screens and stuff that they are doing, you're one guy that was getting you yards after catch and could actually beat some of that stuff and you could feed is now done for the year. So not only does it nuke, so like if teams are going to stay in that too high safety, not only does it nuke your best run after the catch guy and check down guy, it nukes your running game even more than it's already been nuked. So other than that, it should be fine.
I have nothing to add to that. I think you laid that out very nicely.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Matt LaFleur in total. I know we've talked about some of the things, the 4th and 8, the decision-making, the play calling, the identity, the et cetera. How much of this is on Matt? Where are you at with hot seat Matt? What is the state of the coach in Green Bay at the moment?
You want me to go first?
I was floor is open. Courteously offering, not
thank
forcing.
You so much. If you're not watching the video, Grant was so gracious just now. I have a hard time with this one, to be honest, because this was a really bad game. I mean, a really, really bad, awful game. And I think I would like to extend the same thought process and grace that I do to the players, which is if I see you making repeated mistakes, then I'm going to be upset at you. And Matt LaFleur has continued to make the same mistakes as a head coach and as a play caller over, like, honestly, the last couple of seasons. And you can call it his Achilles heel, if you will, but there's now a couple of them and you only get one Achilles heel. So we've talked about the aggressiveness and the non-aggressiveness. We can talk about the clock management. We can talk about some like situational play calling where, like Grant said, you know, you have Greg Olsen on the call being like, why are you running the ball right now? Like you're trying to run the ball against the only strength of the Panthers defense, which is their defensive front. And you're not, you know, giving them. So I call it situational play calling. Cause I don't think I don't think his play calling overall is bad. By no means do I believe that. But then on the flip side, like he knows how to win football games. Like the Packers win football games. Same as I do with players and with the offense and the defense, when we talk post game, I'm like, course correct. And I think you're good. Continue to do this and, you know, lose playoff games because of it. Yeah, there's going to be some problems. I don't put him on the hot seat by any means right now. I mean, they're top of the NFC North and, you know, what'd you tweet, Andy? Like still 4th in line and like odds to win the Super Bowl. So like, let's maybe take a deep breath, but yeah, I mean, he deserves criticism for some repeated mistakes.
I thought that he regressed last year. I thought he had a bad year last year. And part of that was Jordan Love's injury. And I think that made things weird, but throughout the season, I'm like, the 4th down decision-making hasn't been there and the challenges and just stuff like that. And I remember at the end of last season being like, yeah, it wasn't his best year, but I still think he's a really good coach and good players have down years. Right. I think coaches can be similar in that way where it's just you didn't have it this year. And I thought that we'd see some course correction this year. 4th down decision making. Right. Situational play calling. I like that phrase that Perry used. And it's just kind of looked similar and it's been great at times. But the big picture hasn't really resembled a massive leap or some crazy, you know, improvement off of some of the things that I saw last year. I don't understand the play calling specifically with a lot of the stuff behind the line of scrimmage. They can't block it. Like the degree of difficulty on some of that stuff is, okay, so you're throwing a swing pass to a rookie wide receiver like Savion Williams. And the only way this play works is if the 2 or 3 guys in front of him all nail their assignments and hit their blocks. And like, it's just a lot of things that need to go your way. And there's a lot of plays like that. I also, maybe, I can't remember who I saw tweet about this. I think it's a problem when a coach like clearly wants their team to not be the team that they are, when it's like, man, I wish my team could do this. And I'm going to kind of call plays like to reflect that. I think Matt LaFleur and the Packers over the last 2 years have clearly wanted to get more physical up front and not just be this finesse running team. They want to be a power running team. So they signed Josh Jacobs and they draft guys like Anthony Belton and they sign guys like Banks. And it just hasn't worked. And it's not to say that they won't be physical and badass when the O-line is healthy, if they ever get healthy and they have continuity. Like that could happen. But right now, that's not the case. But they're kind of still trying to operate like that team. And that shows a certain stubbornness or just lack of awareness from a coach that kind of makes me nervous. I don't know. Those are some of my Matt LaFleur thoughts. I got a lot of thoughts rattling in, around in my brain. And I think as the week goes along, as we watch more of this team, we'll probably get a better understanding. But that's where I stand right now. And it's pretty jarring to see everyone on the internet like kind of united against LaFleur in this game and how bad of a game it was. And Greg Olsen really throughout the entire broadcast just kind of questioning so many different things.
Yeah. Grant, that tweet also came to mind while we were talking, which is like Matt LaFleur really...
I have it. Verbatim.
You have it?
Yeah. So it was from Aaron Nagler.
I wasn't going to say his name. You know, it's
I couldn't remember who it was, but it was apt point.
No, and I think most people are on the same page with it, which is why I want to give Aaron credit here. You said LaFleur really needs to find Jesus and start coaching the team he has and not coaching the team he wishes he had. They can protect. They stink on the ground. Give love the keys. I just even think even more than that of just... I think he gets a little bit too in the weeds of like, instead of what do we do well, where are the weaknesses to attack the other team? And to your point, like some of the stuff on the outside, they're not blocking it up well. Some of the stuff with Jacobs, they're not blocking it up well. They haven't been a great screen team. Like at some point, be a bit more aggressive, call some of the more, you know, intermediate plays. And it's tough because I don't know that the offensive line against certain teams can protect in some of those situations either. It's just, go ahead.
Well, I just, on the Jordan Love at all, like, I don't think he's neutering Jordan Love to the point where Jordan Love can't be himself. Like, I think Jordan Love has succeeded for the most part just fine. And I think he can sling the ball. But the problem is in a game like this, and maybe this is me wanting to like defend Jordan Love, or maybe this is me being a fan, but like, I swear when Matt LaFleur keeps it tight and the offense is tight, I think Jordan gets into these moments where he's like, well, at some point we need to take a shot. And that deep shot that he threw the pick onto Watson was like so predetermined. Like, that's where I'm going this play. Like, even if there are three defenders down there, I'm ripping it. So I don't want to excuse interceptions that are really bad, but I wonder, like, when it's screen, handoff, anytime, you know, once a quarter, Jordan Love has an opportunity to take a shot, he feels like he has to do it, and he gets himself in trouble that way, I think.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Grant.
Yeah, I don't know. It probably isn't, but it's just something to consider.
Like, let me compliment you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I still think one of the biggest issues with this offense is the offensive line at the moment. And I think a lot of the execution comes down to that, specifically in run blocking. But I think there are some issues in pass protection and some of the blitz pickups we saw today as well. I think this is just as much execution as it is play calling at times. I think there are times Matt's calling the perfect play. Some of those receiver screens, by the way, the one where Savion Williams fumbled on.
Yeah.
That's a run pass option. You're basically doing simple math. Do we have a stacked box against the run? Do we have a good advantageous run situation? We don't. All right, let me look to the outside. All right, their corners are playing off. All right, we're going to smoke screen this thing. Dobbs blocks his receiver. Savion Williams picks up 3-4 yards on the play. We get a positive. We go into a positive down and distance situation. Maybe Savion Williams breaks the tackle. Maybe he gets a bigger gain. I'll take the one-on-one with Savion rather than trying Jacobs to navigate 7-8 guys in the box, whatever it ends up being.
Sure.
It's a simple math problem. So Jordan correctly reads the play, throws the smoke to Romeo or to Savion. Romeo completely biffs the block. Savion runs up the back of Romeo Dobbs, and then Savion fumbles. That's inherently not a Matt LaFleur issue. That is inherently we just completely F that up in all phases, except for Jordan's decision at the line in that situation. And so I do think that there is, now again, I've said it before, execution is on Matt. He's the guy that has to have this team playing at the level that they need to be playing at. I don't think this is a lack of talent on this team. I really don't. I don't think anyone is arguing overall in its entirety that there's a lack of talent on this team. So this is a team that it's not just on Matt. It's not just on the players. It is on both. And they have to play call, coach, and execute better on the field, or it's just going to continue to be massively inconsistent.
I do wonder sometimes what they're doing between Monday and Friday. Like, mostly when they get an illegal formation or like a holding penalty on a kick return, I'm like, what do you guys do Monday through Friday? Like, I feel like I'm watching the same thing every Sunday. Like, do you guys practice this stuff, or like, what? I don't know. And it's the same with the offense. And part of it is they can't block and their line kind of stinks. So that's going to really limit. And I think that's like an important, I don't know. That's an important filter through which to view all these things. But it's like with the blocking on the run plays, especially Matt LaFleur talked about it last week. He's like, no, I thought Jacobs looked great. We didn't block well for him. It's like, okay. And then I turn on this weekend's game. I'm like, okay, I still don't think you guys are blocking all that well. Like, it's a lot of the same things. So I wonder, like, during the week, and that's what the coaching staff is for, right? To hammer these things or to practice these things. Like, sometimes I just wonder what they're doing Monday through Friday. I don't know.
I'm sure I'll hammer this home more. Maybe I'll end up being wrong and I'll just own up to it when I watch the tape. I don't think Jordan Morgan can continue to stay on the field right now. He feels like too much of a liability, and I think they're going to have to figure something out there. But I don't know. Hopefully the All-22 looks better than what my initial eyes told me on the watching the field live and then watching three quarters of the replay already. But it's been too much of a struggle for him. And I don't know that necessarily Sean, I don't know what the freaking answer is at this point, but they might have to start working on some different solutions there. All right. I do want to talk defense because I'm a little bit perplexed on this one. I'm hoping you guys can help me out. Oof. Defense allows 16 points. It's an even time of possession. They get a turnover. The drives go punt, interception, touchdown, punt, field goal. So three punts, an interception, three scoring drives out of seven. Okay. We talked about Bryce Young after starting 4 for 4, goes 7 for 16, 66 yards, no touchdowns and a pick. Panthers rushing at a great day, 33 for 163, about 5 yards per pop and two touchdowns. Dowdle had 130 yards, five yards per carry and two touchdowns. I think my big thing for Green Bay, again, you get to the end of the game, you allow 16 points, you should win in the NFL. And it's hard for me a little bit to say like, God, this one's really on the defense. Yet I hate these long drives. Even the interception drive was like a 8-minute drive that the Panthers were on the field and drove all the way down. I think that's number one. When they had to have a stop at the end, they couldn't get it. And they allowed the field goal drive. They held them, to pretty, like it's a 49-yard field goal against the wind. It's not the easiest field goal in the world, but you're clearly in field goal range. And I think my bigger thing here is three negative plays the entirety of the game for the defense. One pick, great. One sack on Xavier McKinney, who was blitzing on the play and forced the fumble, which actually ended up being a positive play. Because
Quay Walker stopped on it, by the way. He might not have been able to get the ball anyways, but he just stood there. Like, there was no Packer that was like, crap, I got to get on the ball.
So, even they're one of the three negative plays that they had actually turned out to be a positive play. And then one tackle for loss by Micah Parsons in the run game. Like you cannot play 60 some snaps and have only three, which was really kind of two negative plays on the day. You're not getting them in second and third and longs. You're not taking the ball away. You're not doing enough. So while I look at it and say 16 points, you win. Bryce Young didn't even do anything. Like, that's a winning performance from the defense. It still even didn't kind of feel like that. I don't have a positive way to spin this one necessarily either. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. ZBiotics pre-alcohol prebiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/packaday and use the code packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code packaday.
No. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about this game defensively, and they're all kind of confusing. But I mean, to your point, Andy, like, they just kind of let the Panthers like run the game plan that they wanted to. And like, I think the Panthers are still becoming whoever they're becoming. They're like not a very good team. but they're still a team in the NFL capable of, you know, moving the ball and scoring points. And the Packers did like absolutely nothing to put like any, I don't want to say pressure because everyone's going to think I mean like literal pressure, but like pressure on their offense as a whole to like rattle them or like knock them off, like whatever their game plan was. Yes. Thank you. Like be like uncomfortable in any way. And yeah, I mean, no third and longs, no, you know, negative plays on early downs to like make them throw. They didn't force them to do anything that the Packers defense wanted them to do.
Nope.
So they just kind of like let them roll on. And because the Panthers aren't like a very high flying offense, yeah, they scored 16 points, but there was, I mean, like I said it before, like there was no get up for this game. No hunting the QB, no, like when the season started, this defense was like playing really fast and really hard downhill. And you could like feel this like energy from them. Like they were ready to like murder you. Like they were going to play through every second. And you saw it a little bit. Like I think about it in this game, the only play that was like that was Edge Cooper pushing him out of bounds when he was still in bounds, like finishing the play. And they're not really doing that anymore. And like, I don't want this team to just like rely on Micah Parsons to like make a good play when it's needed, because that's not always going to happen. They need to get that like mojo back from the early games.
Which team was downhill on both sides of the ball today?
The Panthers.
Both sides. They were downhill, screaming to the football, or in the offensive side of things, getting push against the Packers line. Carolina played downhill the entire game. It felt like Green Bay was just always on their heels on both offense and on defense. And until this team starts to be the aggressor, starts to be the attacker, more things like this probably going to happen. They were going back to the Detroit or like early in the year. They were the aggressor in that game. They were the attacker. They were the ones playing downhill. Just everything feels just like defense on its heels, offensive line not getting any penetration. They're on their heels. Just felt like Carolina was the downhill team all game long.
Everyone always says like these games are won in the trenches, and they dominated the line of scrimmage like on both sides of the ball the whole game.
Yeah. No, for sure.
I think the thing that you said, Perry, that I like the most is the Packers defense allowed Carolina to play the way they wanted to play. And I think it was pretty clear, not that anyone would ever like take a victory lap on the internet, but it seemed pretty clear that like Packers people were like, yep, this is how Carolina needed to play. Like this was the only way it was going to work. Slow it down, limit possessions, do all these things. And I think the Packers expected that too. And again, to go back to Pam Oliver's comment of Matt LaFleur saying, yep, this is exactly the game we expected. Well, if this is the game you expected, like, you didn't really do much to make life difficult. Like there was no, well, the Panthers are going to do this. How do we prevent them from doing that? It was like, yeah, they're going to do that, but we're better. But they weren't better today. So they end up losing. I think it was Steven Ruiz. I saw a tweet like the Packers have to just stop game planning to win every game by 3 points. I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. That would probably work. I also think the style that the Packers defense plays, too high, keeping everything in front of you, works a lot better when your offense is a blowtorch. And it's like, well, when you do get that stop or two, your offense immediately takes the field, scores a touchdown, and you force the other team to play from behind, you know, picking up little pieces of yardage at a time. But that hasn't really been the case with the Packers. So it becomes a matter of complementary football there. If your offense isn't doing their job, this style of defense becomes a lot less just a lot less effective. Not to mention they've invested in personnel that should allow them to do more than what they're doing. This is the type of defense you run when you're like, well, this is all we can really do. So that's another thought. A lot of random thoughts, kind of like you, Perry, but those are some of my thoughts on them. You articulated yours better, but a couple of my random thoughts.
Just really quick, last thing on defense. I said going into the game, right in the live pregame show, I really did not, and I've said this in a couple other games as well, so this is not benefit of hindsight because Colby Wooden went out in this game. I hate going into the game with only 4 defensive tackles. And it's one thing if you've got LVN who can maybe kick inside and give you that 4th defensive tackle in case of emergency.
Sure.
Wooden goes down. Even with Wooden, by the way, even if Wooden's healthy, with as much as we were expecting Carolina to run the ball, just having that extra defensive tackle, my guess, I don't know this for certain yet, my guess is Kamal Haddon played 0 snaps on defense and special teams combined in this game. Warren Brinson would have played about 25, 30 snaps had he been active in this game. He would have played at least probably 15 even without the Colby Wooden injury. And Wooden goes out, and you're down to three defensive tackles, Brooks and Wyatt. Wyatt's just coming back from injury. Neither Brooks or Wyatt are your sort of nose tackle run stuffing type.
Wyatt's and now this is Stackhouse,
your undrafted free agent rookie, who is good for about 8 to 12 okay snaps per game, maybe is thrown into a 30 plus snap game where you just, that's not what you want from him. So I thought that was a big, and this is not benefit of hindsight. I said it in the pregame show. I don't like them going with four defensive tackles in this game, and I don't like Brinson being inactive. I think it really hurt them in this game, and especially with the Colby Wooden injury as well. Special teams, just really quick. There was the illegal formation on Bullard, which didn't hurt them because they kicked again and they actually got him even further back than they did on the initial kick. Outside of that, the only real big issue here, which was a big issue, was the McManus missed field goal from a very makeable range. And so I didn't think that outside of the missed field goal, the special teams did anything really noteworthy, good, bad. They had one return past the 40 by Savion Williams. Everything else was pretty nondescript, but a massive miss for Brandon McManus in a game that you lose by 3 points to the same side of the stadium that the rookie undrafted free agent kicker drilled a 49 yarder with no time left to win the game in a more difficult pressing situation. So kicker issue.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this. I can't do that versus McManus.
I can't either. It's obvious, but like those 3 points are huge. They lost by three. The 3 points are huge. I don't know. I just like a lot of teams don't have reliable kickers. Maybe that's where we're at right now. We just don't
have. It feels like this year everyone does have a reliable kicker. It feels like everyone's making 70 yarders in their sleep. And we're missing 41 yarders. Like,
well, the Packers have what? Two losses and a tie, and they have two blocked field goals and a missed field goal in each of those. Like,
and they've tied and lost the other two games by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Cool. Good segment of the podcast. That was what's.
Segment brought to you by.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I just don't nothing. Like. Yeah. Like I, again, I'm a part of 6 hours of Wisconsin sports talk radio a day. The Haversick McManus thing does nothing for me. I don't want to open up the phones and take calls on that. That doesn't interest me. Like, just figure it out. I don't even care which one you pick. Pick one and just, I don't know. I'm not interested.
I will say, I think I go with Haversick next week. I think I don't cut McManus yet. I think I put Haversick out there next week and it's his audition. And if he goes perfect, I think he's the guy. And if he doesn't, I'm just going with McManus the rest of the year and hoping for the best. But I think I give Haversick a chance next week.
Fair enough.
I don't know. I don't feel great about it either way, but it's a shocker. We don't feel great about the Packers special teams. All right. Really quick. A couple speed round ones. Trade deadline's Tuesday. Tucker Kraft likely out for the year. Does that change your trade deadline trajectory? Do you want to see Green Bay trade for a tight end? Corner still top of your list. Defensive tackle, guard. Should they just sell the entire team off and try to get as many picks as they can? Where
sell for next year? Well, if this is how they're going to play defense, don't go spend big on a corner. Why? You know what I mean? Like, you're allowing completions underneath, and there's a time and a place for that. I'm not like, it's a defensive style and it's clear they're choosing to play it, but like, don't go pay big freight for an elite corner just to do what you're doing now. Tight end, yeah, but Raiders gonna trade Michael Mayer?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
That was my thought too. I'm like, okay, yeah, but also like, who are you trading for and is it worth it? Probably not.
I had, Tommy Tremble, Michael Mayer as potential options. Don't know that either does much. Zach Ertz, maybe.
Washington's getting blasted. Yeah,
Washington's
right
getting
now.
Absolutely dominated as we do this. I don't think Ertz has much left, if I'm being honest. I don't know. I don't feel great about really any of that stuff. So
I don't see the Packers doing anything at the trade deadline, to be honest.
If it's so, it's going to be very minor. I wouldn't expect anything serious. The most likely tight end scenario is that it's Musgrave with Fitzpatrick getting sprinkled in, and Josh Wiley, their practice squad tight end, will be their new number three. That Ben Sims loss.
Where did Ben Sims go?
He got claimed by the Minnesota Vikings.
That sucks. Okay.
Yep. I like him more than Musgrave, for what it's worth.
You are so anti-Musgrave. This is, we do not have enough time for this, but.
Well, now he's going to get a bunch of opportunities, so maybe he'll be able to do something as a pass catcher. Hopefully I'm more out on people like for 3 years being like, when are they going to give Musgrave some chances? Like, why would they? Like, what has he ever shown? So now he'll have more of an now they have reason to like throw the ball at him until he shows that he literally can't play NFL football. So he'll probably do something now, but no, he just doesn't do much for me.
Where the Packers stand right now, 5-2-1, first place in the NFC North. Fourth seed in the NFC, as we if the season were to end today. They're +950 to win the Super Bowl, fourth best odds, tied with Detroit. +450 to win the conference, second best on the Rams, tied with Detroit there as well. Every team in the NFL has at least two losses, including your Green Bay Packers, who also have one tie on top of that. Packers get ready to face the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football. They are currently 2.5-point favorites going into that game. The Eagles have won two in a row, 28-22 over the Vikings and 38-20 over the Giants. They are 6-2 on the season. The Eagles have been, the last four times the Eagles have been underdogs, they have gone 4-0 by an average margin of over 10 points of victory in those games. Injuries to keep an eye on this week: Dontavian Wicks, LVN, Matthew Golden, Colby Wooden, Aaron Banks, to a lesser extent, maybe guys on IR like Brenton Cox. And then I think we probably know the diagnosis for Tucker Kraft. But well, even if he gets some sort of miracle diagnosis that it was actually just an MCL and not an ACL or something like that, he will still clearly be out for this game against Philadelphia. Yeah. Thoughts on where Green Bay stands or Packers-Eagles coming up next week?
Must win at home, Packers, Eagles. They need to win this game for you to be like, yes, this team can be a Super Bowl contender again.
Not in must win territory yet. But God, I'd feel a whole hell of a lot better if they won that than where they feel right now. I'll say that much. I tweeted out too, it'd be the most Packers things ever to beat the Eagles handily this week on Monday Night Football and then go to the Giants on the road and just immediately lose to the Giants on the road. That would be the most likely outcome of these next two games for sure.
Not a must win, but a must show up. Like if they end up losing, I mean, the Eagles are an excellent football team, without their weaknesses.
You can't get nuked. If you get nuked in this game, that's going to have a really...
If this ends up being like a shootout and it's Eagles who have the ball last and they take this one, fine, I can handle that loss. But you cannot show up like you did today against the Eagles. That is unacceptable.
It's an important game. It's a very important game. No question about it. And I think we'll all feel better if Green Bay wins. But how they play is going to go a long way in that. But the one thing that cannot happen is you can't have like a 31-0 Philly win or something like that. That would be cause for chaos and catastrophe for sure. Really quick, I just want to let you guys know that one of the things that, well, maybe it's just on my end before I say anything. Nope, it's overall awesome. That's been really enjoying about this podcast all day long or all the last hour is it looks like Grant's microphone stand goes up into Perry's microphone. So it looks like your microphone is connected and it's been very, I've enjoyed that all episode long.
A lot of synergy on this podcast.
Lots of synergy. And I'm just off in my own corner. This next week is going to be really interesting in the NFC specifically. First of all, weird week in the NFL from an NFC North standpoint. Lions and Packers both lose, Vikings and Bears both win. So that NFC North is tightening up. But this week we'll have Patriots at Bucks, huge game for the Buccaneers in the NFC. Rams at 49ers, huge game for both of those. I did have Lions at Commanders, although now after the Commanders get completely boat raced, at least so far by Seattle, I'm not sure how enthused I am about the Commanders in that situation, but it is a road game for the Lions. And then Eagles at Packers, of course. It's going to be moving week in the NFC, and the teams that show up in those games are going to look a whole hell of a lot better going forward than the teams that don't. But it should be an interesting week in the NFC.
Yeah, and there's still half a dozen teams in the NFL. Like if you're someone who picks games or bets games, especially against the spread every week, there's like a small handful of teams. Like I don't have no clue what to do with. No clue what to do with Atlanta. No clue what to do with Carolina. Still really don't know what to do with the Bears. Still a lot we thought the Vikings could be imploding a week ago with some of the reporting, and then they go on the road today and JJ McCarthy's first game back and beat the Lions. So I think over the next 2 weeks, we'll probably get a better clue. But up until now, like, there's just been so many teams in the NFL you just can't place. And I think that at some point has to start to crystallize. It has to, right? Because we're getting into what, week 8, week 9. So that'll be part of it. And the Packers are probably part of that. There's probably people around the league who make picks and bets. It's like, I don't know what to do with the Packers, which I understand as well. I'm not surprised they're favored by 2.5 at home against the Eagles. I saw Packers fans on Twitter like, how? I'm like, I feel like that's accurate. Like, I would have probably selected a similar number. So I don't know. I feel okay about their chances.
Just to give everyone, again, a feel for what is going on in the NFL right now as well. And this is not just a Packers thing. This is how tight everything is. The number one team in the NFC has 2 losses. The number 11 team in the NFC has 4 losses. The difference between 1 and 11 is just basically 2 games at the moment, which is really freaking crazy. In addition, you know, again, Colts, Lions, Packers, all weird, bizarro losses on this day. The Kansas City Chiefs, if the season ended today, would not be in the playoffs. So just to give you kind of an idea, they would be the 8th seed right now in the AFC and not in the... And they lose the tiebreakers to the teams that sit at 5, 6, and 7 in the AFC at the moment. So that's where things are at there. The Bears, who are a half game behind the Packers, are 3rd in the NFC North and would be out of the playoffs. And the Packers are the 4 seed. So everything is condensed. Everything is tight. Everything is really hard for most teams every single week. And it's chaotic. Doesn't excuse, again, a second game like this, like we've talked about, but it's a very weird NFL right now. And if you don't come with your A game, and Green Bay clearly did not today, game of a minus game at best, you're going to get handed your lunch to you. And Carolina did, and they deserve the win. I don't think this is not one of those games where I look back at it and be like, well, the wrong team won. Like, Carolina was the better team on the day. Like, yeah, this was not one like Carolina escaped somehow with a win. They outplayed Green Bay for 4 quarters in that game.
I think they were smarter too, which maybe is something that concerns me. Like, I think they had a great idea of what they were going to see and what they needed to do. And they showed up on the road and really executed it. And that kind of worries me a little bit, maybe more than a team showing up flat and just getting pushed around. Cause that does happen sometimes. It shouldn't have happened today, but it does happen sometimes.
Perry, what do you got working? Where can we find you? What do you want to plug?
Just follow me on X and Blue Sky and my lovely co-host Maggie, and our Twitter is Packs What She Said, PWSS Podcast. Like and subscribe on YouTube. We have our typical recap and preview show coming up this week, as we do every week. So you can find us there.
Lovely. Grant?
Twitter at Wisco Grant. I do Evening Drive Sports Talk Radio show in a couple markets around Wisconsin. So 2 free hours every single night of Wisconsin Sports Talk if you'd like it. I wasn't really planning on this being like a big Packers week. I thought, oh, they'd get a nice win, and then he talked about some other things, but it's going to be a lot of Matt LaFleur talk, I would imagine, and maybe the kicker thing, which, God, it's going to suck. But it'll be fun. It's all good content. So
if you are listening and you're tuning into the Wisco Sports Show this week, definitely ask Grant about the kickers. He wants to talk kickers, so make sure to do that when you get the opportunity. It'll make you feel better, and it'll make Grant feel great too. So a lot of kicker questions for Grant this week. I cannot thank you enough, both of you. I wish this was a little bit more therapeutic. I wish I left this feeling a little bit better. Usually after losses, we do. I don't have a lot of cheery thoughts after this one. This is a bummer of a game. It's a long season. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Whatever. Blech. Go Pack, go.
Thanks, go.
I appreciate you guys. Follow her at Perry_Goldstein. You can follow him at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That will do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go.